Discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishment, says Jim Rohn.
Welcome to Coach to Scale, how modern leaders build coaching cultures. I'm your host, Matt Benelli. Join me as we build a community of like-minded professionals who share the belief that effective coaching improves the performance of every team member. Our mission is to help leaders become better coaches. The Coach to Scale podcast is sponsored by Coachem, the world's first AI coaching execution platform that leverages evidence-based coaching to increase quota attainment. And with that, let's get started.
So you're going to see how that applies to today's guest. I've really been looking forward to having this conversation. Our CEO at Coachem, Colm Lunt, has described our guest today as the most disciplined person he knows. Today's guest has led his company Parchment as Chief Growth Officer for 11 plus years and is going through some really exciting times at the company. If you're following them, if you're following Parchment, we'll get into that a little bit as we progress here. But with that, Kevin Martin, welcome to Coach to Scale.
Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. One quick correction. I finished at Parchment, or my last role was Chief Growth Officer, but I haven't been Chief Growth Officer for 11 years. There's a lot of great shoulders that I've stood on and stood beside during that time. But I appreciate the high praise from both you and from Colm. That's very kind.
Well, listen, very modest, humble, with a lot of humility. I think that's what makes you an excellent leader. So, Kevin, let's dive right into it. We talk a lot about a lot of myths in the business. What's a myth over your career that you've seen in this crazy profession when it comes to sales people, sales leaders, that you believe is misguided, maybe even complete BS?
There are two that come to mind. They're kind of one and the same a little bit, but two strands to think about. The first I think about is it applies to most like player coach dynamics, and that's that you have to have done the job or be able to still do the job in order to be good or great as a coach. Matt, we were just kind of joking about sports before at the beginning of our conversation, and hockey. And I mean, you could pick any sport, right? You could pick being a musician and a conductor, any of those things. Just because you are the conductor or the coach doesn't mean that you have to still be able to play or ever play it at the level that your teammates, your athletes are playing. And so I think that's a thing that people often miss when it comes to sales and sales management and sales coaching. To be a great coach, you have to know what your team is responsible for producing and recognize that your success is predicated wholly on their success. Then you throw yourself into working with each of them to get better at their craft. You aren't out on the ice, if you will. You aren't on the court. You're not in the band pit. They're showing them how to play their instrument. You're coaching them how to do that. The second myth, again, and that's kind of connected to the first, would be that great sales reps make great sales leaders. From time to time, you see, and I'm sure that you've seen this, Matt. I certainly have, and probably those that are listening to this have. You'll see great sales reps move into the sales leader position solely because they are great at attaining or exceeding quota, not because they've demonstrated any leadership qualities to lead a sales team or a team generally. In my experience, and this could be perceived as hurtful, but I don't intend it to be. In my experience, some of the greatest salespeople are often the most selfish people that I know, whereas the greatest sales leaders are the most selfless people that I know. And you can make that leap. Like, don't get me wrong, you can make the leap from salesperson to sales leader. But to do that, you've really gotta learn to be selfless and think about the success of others as opposed to the success of yourself. So those would be the two myths that come to mind.
Yeah. And you know, that second one, we've seen that a lot, right? That battlefield promotion. You know, somebody has a great year, they blow out their number, there's an opening in management, it's like, wow, you know, this person, they can hit the ground running, you know, they know how to do this stuff. And it's like, hey, you know, battlefield promotion, thoughts and prayers, have at it. And then, you know, it's sink or swim. So absolutely see that a lot. And I love what you said about the you know, really the myth that you actually have to do the job. And you know, look, can it help? Absolutely. Does it have to be that way? I think there's a lot of people that have proved it. And, you know, in many ways, you're one of them. We'll talk through that a little bit. So, Kevin, what are some core beliefs, you know, or a framework that you use to guide your leadership and coaching?
Yeah, that's a good question. Before I share any of what I'll share, it's worth noting that I haven't had an original idea in my life. Anything that I share, I've just usurped the ideas of others that I believe create an environment for the best possible outcome. So these are not Kevin's ideas. These are certainly ideas that I've heard from others and think that that I've seen can be really helpful or have experienced can be really helpful.
There's a popular book fairly recently, Steal Like an Artist. Another phrase is borrow indefinitely. And but the third is the one I love the most is the rule of three. And so did Colm or anybody ever talk to you about the rule of three?
So
the first time for the audience, the first time you take someone's idea, you give them full credit. So if I took Kevin's idea, you know, Kevin Martin over at Parchment, you know, told me about this. And the second time is you loosely refer to, you know, one of my colleagues, one of my clients, one of my friends that, you know, basically said this. And the third time, you own it outright.
It's yours.
Yeah. So
I have, with respect, been owning these for quite some time. But for those of you who know that you gave me this idea, know that I am crediting the shoulders upon which I stand and appreciate that support.
Were you a lawyer?
I a lawyer?
You'd be a really good lawyer. Yeah. Very.
I just try to be a good friend. Just try to be a good friend. I want to give credit where credit's due. And actually, it's like the first one, which is success is in the agency of others. There is nothing particularly special about me, and I mean that with great sincerity. And those of you that know me, like know me well, you know that there's nothing particularly special about me. In fact, I owe any of the success that can be attributed to me to others because they've either given me opportunities. They put their trust in me, or they've modeled for me what they expect. And as a result, for me as a coach and I coach youth sports, I had the opportunity to coach here in the organization that I'm a part of. I try to spend a good portion of my time with members of the teams that I get to work with to give them opportunities to share that I trust them, to provide a space for them to make mistakes and encourage improvement. And finally, to share my gratitude for their efforts, whether those efforts resulted in the success that we were looking for or just that they put the effort in. Because often the difference between effort and effectiveness is just putting in more effort. And then over time, that effectiveness comes. And that's what you're ultimately looking for. So that first one is success is in the agency of others. The next is, and this is a kind of a highlight back to Colm's comment, which I really appreciate, is you must be disciplined. And I really mean this as a leader. It is hard. There are so many distractions in our lives, just so many distractions. You really need to be disciplined. Each of us have a limited amount of time. We have a limited amount of treasure and a limited amount of talent. We can grow and adjust those things a little bit. But you've really got to be disciplined with how you use each of those towards your individual goals and the goals of your team. The third would be trust. If your team is aligned on to what you're doing and they understand that you trust them, that can be incredibly powerful. Convey that to them. Like, don't just imply it or infer it. Say out loud, I trust you. And that means a lot. When you really reflect on it and think on it. And then that last one, kind of a principle that I think about is this idea of reflection. I think that reflection is one of the most underutilized activities that we can undertake. If the real world is the thought world, how we think about things can be very powerful. And there are two frameworks that I consider like it within reflecting. Again, both of these things are things that I've usurped from others. The first one is, this framework of what went well, what didn't go well, and what's on my mind. Due to like 3 to 5 bullets for each, the most important to the least important for what went well, what didn't go well, and what's on my mind. It's
easy. Are these questions you're asking yourself? I just want to make sure.
These are questions that I'm asking myself.
Okay. So it's kind of like the end of the day, the end, you know, kind of thinking about like, hey, how did today go? Right. Those are the three, you know, high level questions.
And that you're asking your team. So you may ask it of yourself, but when you're coaching, like if you're coaching coaches, or if coaches are coaching the individual team, and doing it at the end of the day, that might be a little too frequent, maybe like once a month, just to like kind of sit back and reflect. I'm not saying you got to journal it. You could if you wanted to, but if you really like dig into it, some people have a propensity where all you want to do is celebrate.
Yeah.
Some people have a propensity where all they want to do is wallow.
Yeah, beat themselves
up. And some people have a propensity where all they want to do is think about the future. Each of those things are good things, but alone, it's not very reflective. But if you sit back and you make yourself write down, in the last month, what are three things that went really well? And in order of like most important to least important, what are three to five things that didn't go well? And again, reflect on it. You might write a list of 10 and then refine that list down. And then what's on your mind, which is typically like what's in the future. And it certainly could be connected to the previous two. That reflective activity is, I think, really beneficial to refocus on things. It can also be helpful for somebody who's looking for something to celebrate. That's it's a great, it's like, hey, but look at the good things that you did. We just had a basketball game this weekend, and we lost against the team. I coach my daughter's JV basketball team, and they lost a game. They lost a game to a team that they have lost to this season by like 1 to 6 points three times. Know the coach of the team, great kids, great coaching team. And we lost. We played an above average game. They played a great game. It's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Disappointment is real, all those things. But if you talk to any one of the young ladies on our team, you would think that everything went wrong.
Yeah.
But actually, they out-rebounded offensively and defensively the entire game, right? Like, so there's a lot of wins in there. It's just, we didn't win the game. So what happened? And so that gives you the, like, what went well, what didn't go well, what's on your mind. But if all you're going to do is just like attach yourself to your emotion, you're going to miss a bunch of things. And then there's no, like, you miss that improvement opportunity, that I want to get better opportunity. So I think like that first, like, what went well, what didn't go well, what's on my mind is the first reflection activity.
Kevin, if I jump in there, do you find, I mean, it sounds like you've experienced this with the team that you coach. What about with your sales team? Do you find that sometimes when you say, hey, what went well? They're like, yeah, you know, this went well, but, and they immediately pivot to what went wrong. It's like, no, wait, we're not getting there.
Yeah, we're not done there.
We'll get there yet. We'll get there, but let's stay on what's went well. You almost have to keep them there and focus.
It is true both ways. It is certainly true for me, right? Like, because we are attached to our emotion of like the situation. And that's where I think, like, picking a time to do it where it's like, okay, I'm going to come to this time with some frequency, but not all the time. It's like, I don't know, it right after a big win or a big loss, it's like, let's talk about it's like I'm in my emotion right now. Like, don't bug me about this big treatise on what, like, don't bring it up right after the game. Like, it's like on a sales call or when you're meeting with a customer, when you're meeting with a member, and you're packing up your stuff and everybody wants to talk about how the meeting went, and you as the leader in the room, and hopefully it's you as the leader in the room, or maybe some of your more tenured staff will recognize this as well. Nobody talks about how it went until you've left the building and you're far gone. Don't, like, not even in the elevator. Go talk away. Like, do your hot wash far away from where everybody is. So
a lot of reasons for that, by the way.
A lot of reasons for that. Like, kind of separation from what happened is a helpful thing. Like, don't tell me all the things that I did right or wrong right now, because I'm not gonna hear it. I'm tired, right? Like, there's all, like, all of those, like, I got a gazillion other things in my mind, and so that reflective activity is happening. And then when you get in the practice and habit of doing it, then you can kind of get closer to the event itself because you know what you're doing. But I completely agree with the point that you brought up, Matt. Like it's certainly myself, but certainly sales folks are guilty of. And I think part of it as well is, I mean, we often hear of like the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset.
Yeah.
I think that to varying degrees and at different times we struggle with what reflecting can expose about ourselves. And I might not like what I see, or I might not like what I feel or how it makes me feel. And if you as a coach can create an environment where people know that you're not there beating them up, but you're there calling them up, I think that can be a very meaningful thing. And if you are somebody who like right now is listening to this and you ask yourself, do the people that I work with perceive me as somebody that beats them up or calls them up to something better? Like wrestle with that. If you're somebody who's beaten up, I would encourage you to stop. Yeah. I would really encourage you to stop. Ask somebody, do you think of me as somebody who beats you up or calls you up? And I want to be somebody that calls you up, because that's how people are going to get better and they're going to want to do more.
Yeah. Contrary to the popular quote, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. We know that for sure now.
Yeah.
So I took you off with that. My question took you off a little bit. So you talked about the framework of what went well, what am I thinking about?
There's one other one. Yeah. So the other one is, and this is again, not very clever, but do a pros and cons list, but cover up the pros. Cover up the pros. So I'll use an example. Right now I am working in my unfinished basement. It's a little cold. I have a space heater underneath my feet. You and I could joyfully live with the pros of a finished basement. We could joyfully live with the pros. Cover up the pros, because we can all joyfully live with the pros. My question is, can you joyfully live with the cons? My question is, can you joyfully, and not just like kind of begrudgingly move along with the cons, can you joyfully, go look up the definition of joyfully live with the cons.
Joyfully live with the cons of a finished basement. So I'm just thinking about it in this context.
So what would be the cut? What would be the cut? Maybe I have to take a mortgage.
It's going to cost money.
It's going to cost money. Maybe I got to spend money to do it.
You got to get a storage unit
to put all your stuff. I got to move a different spot. Can I joyfully live with the cons? Mm-hmm. So take that same principle and like, whether it's your personal life or your professional life, the things that you're doing within like managing a sales team, the products, like all of those things. So if you have a choice, and sometimes you don't have a choice, but again, this activity of just like, what are the pros of this? What are the cons? Again, the idea of reflection, reflecting on just genuinely sitting down, writing some stuff out. Can you joyfully live with the cons of those things? If you have a choice to do it or not, and you can't joyfully live with the cons, run. Run far, run far and fast away from that, because no matter how great the pros are, the cons are going to bring you down. You are going to have a really, really hard time with that. If you don't have a choice, know that those cons are going to be tough, and figure out how to like manage through that and just get the discipline around how do you manage through those cons, because that's going to suck a lot of joy out of you. And maybe over time you can figure out how to be joyful, but just know like it's going to be tough. But just the knowledge of this is going to be a difficult thing and that I'm going to have to suffer through, like just know that. Just
two awesome frameworks, really, really, and very actionable. So I really, really love that. And maybe this next question, maybe it ties into what we're talking about here, maybe not exploring the cons. But you're very observant. You know, you've been around a lot of situations. You've seen a lot of mistakes made. What are some of those mistakes, for lack of a better word, that you see salespeople making, kind of more over and over that, you know, you, you feel like they should be able to, hopefully they should be coached around being able to sidestep common mistakes.
Yeah. I think this is true for sales, to be sure. I think this is true for a lot of roles in any organization, but in particular sales. I think that we often don't know what we're responsible for producing. So
don't I just need to hit the number?
Yeah. Don't I just need to hit the number? But what is the number? And so a question to ask yourself and to ask your team, if you're a sales leader, well, certainly ask yourself this if you're a sales leader, but also ask this of your team, were you productive today? Which that makes everybody like, it's like, how dare you ask me if I was productive today? If you look very uncomfortable, right? Very squeamish. And I'm like, I don't care if the answer is yes or no. I mean, obviously I do care a little bit. But I actually care more like if you know what you're responsible for producing. What is the thing that you're ultimately responsible for producing? One of my brothers is a farmer, an actual farmer, but blueberries and apples is what they produce. His name is Ian.
What state? Just curious.
So I grew up in Canada. So Ian is in the province of Ontario.
All right.
Everything that Ian does should be focused on producing apples and blueberries. Anything that Ian does that is not focused on and devoted to producing apples and blueberries is a distraction and should not be part of the task list of things that he is doing. And if he doesn't know if it's connected to that or not, he should then see previous comments on reflection, go, is this a thing that's connected to the thing that I'm responsible for producing? If it's not, then I should stop and then use that time to devote to the things that I'm responsible for producing. And So
because I think this is important, because I know when I've asked my teams in the past, hey, how was your week? You know, was it productive? And it's, it's all right. You know, well, what made it okay? Well, I closed the deal. But you know, there's just not a tight answer. By the way, that's my fault as the leader for they don't know how to answer. I didn't work with them. I set expectations on what we're expected to produce and what the definition of a productive week is. So there wasn't anything to frame it. So if you ask your brother, hey, would you have a productive day or productive week or whatever, and he says, we didn't get any. It's not in season yet.
It's not in season.
The blueberries and the apples didn't come off the tree yet. What do you say? Like, what's productive mean?
Yeah, no. And let's hang on Ian for a minute, and then we can go. So they're not producing anything. They're not yielding anything until like the summer and the fall, seasonally speaking. But they're doing a lot of activity that gets to that point. And so when
they don't take 9 months off,
he was trimming trees at 4:30 in the morning. While I was playing hockey. He's doing something physical. I'm doing something physical. He's doing real work. I get to have fun. But there's a series of activity. And like, if you're a sales rep who's doing seven figure deals, you might have one productive deal a year, the output of all that work and effort. Now, there's little things that you're doing like every single day to get you to that point. But if you've taken the time to break down what are all the steps that I need to execute on in order to get to that big outcome, then you can say, I haven't produced the end result yet, but my first meeting turned into a second meeting and my second meeting turned into this. And now I'm connected to, I'm not single threaded, I'm multi-threaded. Like you're producing the next steps as for those of you that use Sandler. I've gotten my firm future commitments, right? There are these micro activities that then build up to the larger produced result. If you're on the small account side, right, your deals are turning a lot quicker. Maybe you use sales velocity to measure the efficacy of that. So there are ways for each of you to measure productivity, but just the mere act of saying what is productive and what is not like going through that activity is very meaningful. And then finding a way to scalably communicate to your organization, here is how we measure productivity. Here's how we do it. And you can then tack on to, I was or was not productive this week. And again, you're going to have weeks where you weren't productive. And that's okay. That's okay.
But you need to know that you weren't productive that week. You need to know, not the best week.
Was it the best? Maybe you weren't productive that week because you took vacation. Great.
That's good. That's okay.
Great. That's what's wonderful. that actually, if you had a productive week when you were on vacation, let's talk. That it's okay.
Well, so, that's actually, like,
but no,
that's actually an interesting point, right? So what are your thoughts on that? Because there's probably a lot of folks, and I certainly resembled this at points in my career where I wasn't maybe as productive, let's say the week before vacation, then all of a sudden I'm on vacation and I'm trying to catch up on stuff that was work related. And so now I'm not being a productive husband and father with my family on vacation. My mind's diverted. Not good either, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I go back to time, treasure, and talent. How do you want to spend it? I am certainly, anybody who listens to this will know that I am certainly guilty of this. I've worked since I was very young, and I have a hard time sitting still. Even when we're on vacation, I am up early when everybody's sleeping and I am doing stuff just because it's hard. Go back to discipline. You've got to find a way to at least imbue some discipline to just say, okay, I need to carve out this time to do these other things. If you've got children, if you've got significant others or a spouse or people in your life that care about you or that you care about, they probably care about you too. You should spend some time with them. Something I certainly need to do better than with.
Yeah. Amen to that. Do you think that sometimes salespeople, sometimes we have difficulty seeing the forest through the trees when it comes to focusing on the right things, i.e. what we need to produce?
Yeah. I think that we do. You know, there are a number of jobs that are difficult. There are a ton of jobs that are difficult. I think sales can be difficult for a number of reasons. If you break down what salespeople are responsible for, the activities, you could probably sum it up into three things. Creating pipeline, managing pipeline, and closing pipeline. And this is specific to ZBA sales or cross-sell sales specifically. Customer success, I think you got some other things that you do around that with renewals, but sales specifically, creating, managing, and closing pipeline. I think that most sales reps are good at two of those three things. I think that any of us, by the way, in the jobs for which we're responsible, I think that we're always good at a portion of them, and then we have to kind of have somebody manage and coach us in the other areas. As time goes on, unless we're getting coached, we kind of get comfortable with the things that we're good at and hope that the other things will take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, unless we're getting coached and somebody's there refining us and saying, how do we, how do you get better? Number one. Number two, I think this is where comp plans come in. The things that we're good at, we're naturally just going to keep doing, right? Because I'm good at it. I like doing things that I'm good at. And you don't need to necessarily pay me more to do the thing that I'm really good at. It's the things that I'm not good at that you have to put incentives in front of me on in order to go do that thing. And so I think valances, I think is the MBA term for it, or incentives come in to think about. So my challenge to the sales leaders and coaches that are listening would be, what are the things that you are holding your salespeople responsible for? Is it creating, managing, and closing pipeline? And if so, do they get rewarded for those in any way? Do you coach them on those things? Or are you only focused on, did you hit your number this week? it's like, well, what about the other things? And are you coaching them on the other things?
Where do metrics and KPIs fit in?
Yeah, so I think that they're incredibly important. You can't coach things, at least quantitatively, without knowing the data of what's happening. So for me, we use sales velocity. We obviously look at bookings. We look at pipeline created. We look at how pipeline closed to quarterly quota are some of the things that we take a look at. And again, we aren't using those to beat people up. We're using those to call people up where we say, hey, like, we noticed this. We also want to use those to celebrate people who do certain elements of those really well and hold them up as a beacon for everybody and say, hey, like, look at how this person's just doing a phenomenal job. And there's also going to be seasons for each of us where we're doing really well. And then either things change in the territory, like we don't operate in isolation. There's competition. There's stuff in our personal lives. There's product experience, right? There's all those things. But kind of understanding where we are is important. And so I think that metrics give us visibility into where we are and then where we need to go next. If we don't have that visibility, I personally could not operate without metrics. Not again to beat people up, but just to know where we are relative to where we said we were going to go.
To help you answer the question, was I productive today? Yep. Was the team productive today? So here's a little bit of the if I knew then what I know now type of question. What's a lesson learned along the way, maybe a tough lesson learned along the way you wish you learned a little bit earlier in your career?
It's really, really good question. In our preparation, when you asked me about this, this will be a personal response. So I was once asked by a colleague in a company meeting. So there were a bunch of other colleagues around, and this colleague knew generally what my answer was going to be, at least in the vicinity. The question was, how do you feel about emotions? And my response was, I recognize that people have them. I am not a very naturally empathetic person. I'm just not. I tend to think that a little bit of difficulty is a good thing, even sometimes a little bit more than a little bit of difficulty is a good thing, because it creates the environment to refine you and make you better. And I kind of lean into that despite how people's emotions are. And that's something that I continue to work on both in my professional and personal life, is to have empathy where I probably don't have it enough in certain situations. And right, like in the same way that one's emotions can get amped up, like my reaction is like, your emotions are wrong. Like that's not the appropriate response in many cases. Like how do I manage and coach that? So, and for myself.
Did that ever bite you? Like, the awareness of that is super important, knowing that this trait is important. Maybe I'm not naturally wired. I need to work a little bit harder at that. But sometimes that self-awareness comes because, you know, you were blindsided, you're bitten by it in the past. Anything come to mind that you can share?
Yeah. So I actually think it's in the, there's not like an acute example, like a specific conversation where it happened. I actually think it's more of a trend where, which is actually more, if I may admit, is more painful, which is if people that I care about, whether it's like colleagues or family or friends that have some like emotional thing that they want to talk about, I'm probably not the first person they're coming to. Even though I want to be there for them, like, and I genuinely do, I'm not the first call when I want to be the first call.
You want to be the first call.
I want to be the first call. Yeah. Oh no, totally. I do. But I have exhibited this attribute to them where they're like, he's probably not going to be as sensitive as I need him to be right now. And so he's probably not the first person I'm going to call. Like if I happen to be around, it's like, maybe I'll talk to him. But like, and so, I don't think it's an acute situation, but rather, if you, it, it, if you have the reputation of being a certain way, like that's the natural consequences of that will play itself out, which can in many cases be great, and in this case might not be as great.
Yeah. It just reminds me of this story. I say it a little bit tongue in cheek, but I worked for a great leader and a friend who's become a good friend, who would acknowledge that he's not the most empathetic or sympathetic person in the world. And, you know, in fact, I think his line was one time, if you're looking for sympathy, it's between shit and syphilis in the dictionary. The way that manifested itself in leadership on a day-to-day basis is if you asked him a question, he would say, hey, who are the two or three people you asked this question to first before you came to me? And mm-hmm. the way he asked it, he came off like a jerk.
Mm. Yeah.
But he wasn't trying to be a jerk. He was trying to promote collaboration among the team, problem solving, right? Personal responsibility, self-sufficiency, all good things. But the way he delivered it was not great. And I think that he's heard it. It was a trend for him, but the way, like, I think it really hit him is when I hit him with a 360 and people kind of said all these great things, but, you know, here's the one thing. So that self-awareness is good. The importance of empathy is many, many books have been written about it. So kudos to you for figuring it out. Let's talk about you and what you do. So Kevin, you've been chief growth officer over at Parchment you've been at Parchment for 11 plus years, most recently as chief growth officer. See, I rephrased the question. What does Parchment do? Right? What does it do for its clients? And what have you loved about this journey?
Yeah. So I'll start with our mission. Parchment's mission is to help turn credentials into opportunities. So if you think about what a credential is something that represents what you know and how well you know it. And if you're like me, you believe that education is transformational. It certainly has been for me. I'm a first generation college student. I immigrated to the United States. When you think about like international students, right, all those things, education has been transformational. And for Parchment, we solve probably four things for institutions that we partner with, whether it's high schools in the secondary space, both domestically in the U.S. and abroad, and then post-secondary or tertiary institutions within the United States and outside of the United States, and then some workforce as well. There's an operational efficiency side of things that we address for them, just the basics of requesting and processing and fulfillment of records requests, of credential requests and fulfillment and issuing. A trusted network, building that out. There's a lot of innovation that we work on as well, just in terms of innovating the credentialing space, whether it's things like a comprehensive learner record. So if you think about, for any of you that are listening, maybe you did some out-of-class experiences at the institutions that you attended. Maybe you did a study abroad, or you played athletics, or you participated in music in some way, or theater. Those things aren't always represented on your academic transcript or other credentials. So being able to represent those in more meaningful ways to the whole educative experience. So we're all about communicating, teaching, and learning in the credential, and doing that in a secure and meaningful way for institutions, but ultimately for the learner. Of which each of us are hopefully learners. So that's what we're all about. We work with high schools, colleges, universities within the U.S. and around the world to support them in those efforts.
Very cool. And what have you most enjoyed about the long, successful journey you've had there?
So I'll tell a brief story and then connect that to the work. So when I was probably like, it was probably like nine. So my one of my grandfathers, and then my father and his two younger brothers. My grandfather had my grandmother had a wood burning furnace in their house, and so they had to cut wood all the time to be able to do that, and to have heat in their house. And so near where I grew up, there was this wood lot. A friend of my grandfather's, they go cut wood, and so when I was nine, I got to go with them. And my uncles and my father and my grandfather, they all worked quite a bit, as I'm sure like the people in your lives did. And the only time that I could ever spend time with them was if I went with them where they were working, because they were working so much. Mm-hmm. And so like I think they gave me like a hatchet, right? And I'm sure it was raining. I'm sure I complained the entire time because it was cold. It was in like October. But I'm sure I was the worst. But I look back on it and I think it was like the best time ever, because I got to spend time with four people that I really dearly loved. And so for me, like I connected work a lot and to the people that I worked with. And like the only time that I got to spend time with the people that I loved was if I was working. And so for me, I have really loved working with the people of Parchment and the customers that we serve. And I say that with great sincerity. Like there's just some wonderful people that have worked here over time that still work here. You know who you are. There are some just wonderful customers that we've got to work with and support. You know who you are. It has just been, it's been tremendous. And I really genuinely enjoy spending time with them, and hopefully transforming the lives of a bunch of people that we'll never meet. Whenever I get on a plane, my two prayers are that somebody told the pilot that they love her that day, that they love him, and that they're, or that they love them, that they're, that they've gotten everything that they need, and that they're well credentialed for the work that they've done. Right. Like just that type of thing. So.
Well, I love the story that you told and how you connected that to what you love about, what you're doing at Parchment. That's a really thoughtful story. As we close out, I got just a couple of questions about coaching and impact. First one, Kevin, is people who care about coaching and developing people. People have, observations and create frameworks and make it their own. Usually had that mentored and modeled for them. Mm-hmm. Tell us about someone in your life who coached you that had an impact on who you are as a person and what you do in your career.
Yeah. So there are a lot of figures that I think about. So I think that there's the idea of I don't have any names of people that I'm going to share just because they're not like famous people and they're very personal to me and I want to be respectful of them. But in terms of qualities that they exhibited, number one, that they like showed me that they trusted me, mm-hmm. that they conveyed that either through saying it or saying, okay, now get back out there and go do it again. I think that that's often a thing that when you give when somebody is given an opportunity, sometimes they feel like it's like, why are you asking me to go do this? It's like, because I think that you can, and like, this is the next step in the things. So like making it clear to them, if they are clearly not picking it up, like, I want you to go do this so that you have the opportunity to learn it. So I think that's just like the trust and the opportunities given. The other is, kind of keep your head down and do your work. I don't know if that's understand what you're responsible for, like speak up when you need to speak up, but just like do the thing that you need to do, like get that done.
Yeah.
It's very easy to kind of get caught up in the cycle of things. Like just do the thing that you need to do. And then I would say just show a lot of grace. Think the best of people, because hopefully they're thinking the best of you. We're all capable of making mistakes, and just think that people are trying to do their best work as well. And if there clearly is something going on, like not having something in front of a big group, but bringing that person aside, or when the opportunity avails itself and having that conversation in a more private setting, so that, again, that it's not perceived as beaten up, but calling up. So those are some of the things that I have experienced in my own life, because I am by far, I am far from perfect, and still need a lot of work in those areas, and have been given all of those things over time.
We're all works in progress for sure. Yes. And I can't remember if it was at the beginning of this call or it was in our prep call, but you also said something around this topic I'd like to dig into. You talked about there's people in our lives that we just don't want to disappoint, right?
Yeah.
I'll hit on that one.
So, my grandfather, who has since passed, we were on our last drive together, and he was asking me about my work and all those things, and he said to me, "Don't become a heel clicker," which to him was, "Don't be the guy with the fancy shoes that acts like he's better than everybody else," and there are people in your life that you just don't want to disappoint. Like, it's not that you want to impress them, it's that you don't want to disappoint them. In terms of the way that you conduct yourself, the way that you talk to others, all of those things. And you're going to have those times where something comes up, and my encouragement would be to think about those people and go, however I do this next, like, will they be disappointed in how I did this thing or that thing? There are people in my life certainly that I don't want to disappoint. And yeah. So that sometimes is a motivating thing to, and it's a corrective thing where you go, okay, like, all right, I got, even though I'm not going to just like, I got to do it. I got to do it this way at my own self expense and all those things. But
My mother, when she was alive, was the master at leveraging those folks in my life. When, you know, I remember I was a young teenager. My grandfather died, I think, when I was like 13. And then, you know, a year or two after that, I did something stupid. Well, I did something stupid all the time. But the one situation in particular where I did something stupid, I was getting defensive, and she pulled out the, "What'd your grandfather think?" Subject, like, totally. Yep. And yeah, so there's situations like that in my life where it's like, well, yeah, what would, yeah, you feel guilty. Like, wow.
To hang on that thought for a minute, and this is true. I know that, like, you and I both gave examples of men in our lives, and that it is true. Like, there are women in my life that it's the same thing for, but I also think it's important for people to realize that you are that coach to somebody. So there's who I look up to. But, and I say this with great humility, there are people that look up to me. There are people that look up to you. There are people that look up to you that are listening to this. And the way that you communicate on those things, they're going to remember that. Mm. Like, I remembered what my grandfather said. There are people that are going to listen to what you say because they look up to you as a person, as a leader, as a coach, as all those things. And they're going to remember what you said. Is that how, when you're not around, is that how you want them, is that how you hope that they operate?
Yeah.
And if it's not, maybe change what you were going to say.
That's right.
Yeah. And if it is, like, just like repeat it from time to time, emphasize it from time to time. There are people that look up to you. Not because there's anything special about you necessarily, but because there's just something about you that they go, man, I really admire so-and-so, or I want to be more like so-and-so. People remember what you say and how you act and how you operate.
And how you made them feel.
And how they made them feel. Was that Maya Angelou who said that? People will remember what you say. They remember how you make them feel.
That's right.
And, just take that seriously, and the weight of that.
People are watching, and you don't always know who and when. Last question, Kevin, you know, this is the Coach to Scale podcast. We talk about coaching a lot. You're a hockey player from Canada. You're very active. You coach yourself. Who's a famous coach that you admire, or at least what are some of the attributes of great coaches that resonate the most with you?
Yeah, so I think attributes of great coaches are ones that show their team that they trust them, ones that are willing to do the hard work of rebuilding a team if a team needs to be rebuilt, that communicates clearly on what they're doing to the organization of what they're doing, so that like there's kind of buy-in there. And then over time, like you begin to see positive results as a consequence of that work. I would say a contemporary example of this, even though it is not like it didn't result in like the ultimate outcome that everybody was looking for, would be like the Detroit Lions and Dan Campbell. Yeah. Like in 3 years, where they were taken. And I know that everybody could have a lot of opinions about that. So like suspend your disbelief to the extent that you need to. But when you see like where things have gone over time, I would say there was some great coaching there of bringing a team together, showing people that they trust them, communicating to the organization and to the community about what they were doing. And you've seen people in Michigan got to talk about football all the way through the end of January, which hasn't happened in a long time. So, yeah.
Yeah, they had a great year college pros for sure. Yeah. And look, I'm a lifelong Patriots fan. I was watching that Lions 49ers game, cheering for the Lions like they were, my hometown Patriots. So that's a great example what the Lions have built there, the rebuild, the trust he has, the clear communications with the press, his team, and the results. And the results do matter, but you don't always get there on the first or second try. It takes a while. So he's building that. And I think that's what you talked about. But we build teams, we build companies in this crazy business. So I think that's a great place to stop, right there. We talked about a lot of things. We covered a lot of ground, Kevin. You've had a productive day yourself, the hockey at 4:30, you're here doing this, and now you're going to get going with your real day. But we talked about time, treasure, talent. We talked about calling them up versus beating them up. We talked about the importance of empathy, importance of trust. So I really, really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your lessons learned with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Matt. I hope you have a great day.
All right. And for everybody out there watching and listening, thanks for doing that. Wherever you consume these podcasts, whether it's a YouTube or Spotify, engage, hit the like button if you like it. Tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, and tell us what you'd like to see more of. We're looking to deliver content to you that's interesting and actionable. And I hope we did that today. I certainly feel like we did with Kevin. So again, Kevin, thank you. And to all of you out there, thank you for watching and listening. And until next time, coach them if you want to keep them. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Coach to Scale, How Modern Leaders Build Coaching Cultures. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at coachem.io. That's coachem.io. And follow us on Twitter at coachemnow. See you all next week. Thanks for joining. And remember, coach them if you want to keep them.